Hey everybody, welcome to the Film Pigs. We're doing a bacon episode this month, which is the month of March, even though this is coming out in April.
Oh, we're pretending this is March.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
It's a stealth episode.
It's stealth. it's coming in like a lion and going out like a pig. That's what we're doing for our March episode. In April. I'm very excited about this. We're going to talk about, I'm Todd Anderson and I'm here with Steve Skelton.
Hello.
That's Steve Skelton. I'm very excited to have this conversation tonight. We're going to talk. Our main talk is going to be about the Roadhouse. I'm calling it the Roadhouse trilogy.
I call it the Roadhouse multiverse.
Yeah, it's the RHMU. If you're Skelton, it's just a trilogy. If you're me, not that I don't want more, but you know, when things are three, I call them a trilogy. So before we do that, though, we're going to do a little of the old what have you seen lately. Skelton, too busy. You're too busy.
I was traveling. I didn't see anything in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, did you get on planes?
Yeah, I got on planes.
You didn't watch any movies on the planes?
No, it was a short plane ride. It was just to San Francisco.
Did you watch some sitcoms?
No, I just watched porn at full volume on my phone the whole way.
That's a regular problem.
Which is more polite than anybody that takes off their shoes on a flight. You maniacs.
Jackasses.
Monsters.
Well, I'll tell you the things that I've seen. I've seen some stuff in the theater, and I think it's important to mention that.
Did you see that Dune 2?
No, of course not. What? Who do you think I am? No.
Dune 2, even more Dune.
More sands and more worms, which is, if I'd gotten more sands and more worms in the first one,
you might have been more interested in possibly a Dune 2, but yeah, there was Dune 1 was like act one of a movie, but
yeah,
for 3 hours.
Yeah. And, how do you pronounce his name? Villeneuve?
Yeah, I don't know.
Villeneuve. His movies are very pretty. And that's it. That's it. That's they're outside of being pretty. I don't know what I'm supposed to take away.
Yeah, like I've never loved his movies, nor have I really disliked his movies. But like apparently I'm supposed to be, it's kind of like he's like Nolan to me.
That's a good comparison.
It's kind of the same thing with most of Nolan's movies. I mean, there's some Nolan movies I like better than others. Like I really do like Dunkirk.
Dunkirk was cool. Nolan had a couple of them.
Yeah. But yeah, but it's kind of that same, you know, category of director that is like really, really good, really meticulous, and composes really beautiful images. But ultimately I'm left a little flat by the movies as a whole and always think they're too long.
Yeah. Yeah. The narratives and characters are not compelling and the movies are long. I'm trying to think what was the Villeneuve's big move? What was the one that put him on the map? It was it had to be before Blade Runner 2049.
Well, yeah, but he had like, I think his kind of break industry. I don't, it wasn't like a blockbuster movie hit, but what was it called? Enemy? Was his
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, like his, that I think that might have kind of broke him into, you know, A-lister director area.
Okay,
that's the one I remember that was like, oh, that's kind of his, you know, expensive art movie before Blade Runner.
Yeah, he's definitely, I totally agree with your assessment of him. He's a guy who, when you watch his movies, they're not bad. And they look great, but none of them have stuck with me. And he has yet to make, you know, at least Nolan has made a movie or two that I'm like, okay, I like that. Like I'm into it. like yeah. Dunkirk, like you said. I just like hanging out there.
Dunkirk.
I like hanging out in the Dunkirk, you know, environment, universe, whatever you call it. But most of his movies.
World War II?
Well, I don't like hanging out in World War II. You know what I mean. I do like, I've reached the age where I do enjoy World War II stuff more than I should, more than anyone should.
Yeah.
But I'm a white American man. I'm 52.
Yeah. White American middle-aged dads are supposed to really like World War II movies. That's like, kind of like that's a requirement. It's almost, it might be a legal requirement in this country. I'm not sure.
Did you ever see that movie, Small Soldiers?
That was a true story.
But Phil Hartman is in that movie.
Yeah.
And he has one of the funniest lines in cinema history. When he's sitting there watching war documentaries.
Yeah.
And he joyfully says, World War II is definitely my favorite war. Which is, the rest of the movie is garbage. But
that's like dead on. Yeah.
That's so funny. It makes the movie worth it. The things I saw in the theater, I don't know if you're interested in these, Skelton, but I saw, Immaculate, which is a horror movie, about a nun who joins, you know, like a weird,
nun cult.
They all join a cult.
Okay. Let's be clear.
They're all in a cult. But they wear their penguin outfits in a specific convent. And so because the main character of this movie has like various problems with authority and is like a sufferer of terrible things. She's got PTSD and all that. So they send her to this out in the middle of nowhere convent. She gets pregnant. That's why it's called Immaculate.
Yeah, no, so that's it becomes, I was wondering if that was gonna
it becomes about in. The church and regular people fighting against each other over this lady who's pregnant, like miraculously. And it like descends into like properly descends into demonic horror.
Oh, nice.
I thought on Rotten Tomatoes, it's gotten a pretty good percentage. I think it's like 77% or something, which is a C+. That's pretty good. I would say in comparison to most horror movies right now, it's way better than that. It's a B. It's a solid B picture. It's got good, it's entertaining. It's not as scary as I wanted it to be, but I've seen everything, so it's very hard to scare me. So if you in a horror tale, get me into the characters, because the performances are very good in this movie. You get me into that, and then I can kind of forgive whatever shortcomings there are. So I would highly recommend. It'll be out streaming, I imagine, soon, because it's not a famous picture.
That's two nuns up for Immaculate.
Two nuns up. You don't have to be a nun to enjoy Immaculate. So the other movie I saw Immaculate, and then right after it, I wanted to go see Prime Time with the Devil, which is a horror movie that's getting these great reviews, but I just found out it's going to be on Shudder in like 2 weeks.
So you're kind of like punting on that.
But we did go to the Nun movie with the intention of seeing the Prime Time with the Devil movie afterwards, but it was sold out.
Oh.
Well, it wasn't sold out. The front row was open, but we're not watching movies in the front row. We're in our 50s. We don't do that shit. We got neck things and we can't look up like that. So we instead went to the Kristen Stewart movie, Love Lies Bleeding, which is a very well-reviewed movie. And it's another movie. I don't think it's terrible, but at a certain point, I was done with it.
Right.
At about the halfway point. And it started to become absurd. It's very kind of self-indulgent-y. I don't know where people get the money to make self-indulgent indie films, but I would really like to be added on to that.
Yeah, to be involved in
some way. Somehow talk to the people who fund those things. That would be cool. And I also saw Godzilla Times Kong. Is that how you say it?
Is it Times Kong or X Kong, I mean, or with it, Kong or near Kong? Times,
the last one was V, which is versus. This one is X, so it's Times. Because I guess they fight together in this movie. And it delivered everything I could possibly want from a movie with Godzilla and Kong. It goes hard. It's mostly CGI sequences, cut up by human beings having overly sentimental relationship, conversations. You know, which makes it basically CGI monster porn. And I'm fine with that. I'm honestly fine with that. Keep bringing those things. This movie just has the misfortune of being a Godzilla movie with math in its title. That, you know, there was one that came out right before the end of last year called Godzilla Minus One, which is, this movie just suffers in comparison to that. This new one is constant monster fighting. So,
well, and the thing is, like, I want to see that. I missed Minus One and I wanted to see that. But the problem is Legendary and Toho have a deal, and which is why Godzilla Minus One was pulled from theaters before X Kong was released, and because Minus One was still making money. Yeah. Like, there was no reason to, financially, there was no reason to pull Godzilla Minus One from theaters, but
they should have delayed this one if that was their thing. If they didn't,
yeah, but that's their, that's the thing, is like, that's their deal, is like, they can't have two competing Godzilla movies in the theaters, but that also, I believe, also delays streaming as well.
Oh.
So, you know, I think there might be a Minus One Blu-ray in Japan that is the first thing that's going to be released in the near future. But like, that's why you can't find Minus One on streaming now that it's left theaters. So it's still, so I don't know how long that the embargo is, but I don't appreciate that, because like, I want to see both of those movies and I'd want to see both in the theater. And, you know, I would be more than happy to see two different Godzilla movies in the theater, but Legendary.
Oh, I mean, it would be awesome if at the, you know, the Tiki Drive-In out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It would be great to watch a double feature of Godzilla Minus One and Godzilla Times Kong. That's a great double feature. I agree. It's sad that they can't get that shit together.
Yeah, because even if they did did a specific pairing where it's like, yeah, do it as a double feature so you buy tickets to both, you know, anyway, yeah, but that's the reason why Minus One is out of theaters now.
Anyway, Minus One is a movie. It's 100% a movie. It won an Oscar, if that matters to you as a thing, but it's a movie. I cried for the last half hour of Godzilla Minus One. Cried. It was very,
I believe that.
It was very, and it wasn't because I knew it was ending soon. It was because of what was happening with the characters and the narrative. And I'm not saying I didn't choke up during Godzilla Times Kong, because I did, because they, you know, pull those strings, and I'm old and it's very easy to make me be sappy about family and relationships and all that shit. I'm a sucker. So, you know, I choked up a few times in that, but that was mostly just a CGI spectacle. Comparing the two made me realize what I really like about Godzilla Minus One is it takes this Godzilla story and Godzilla is like perfectly melded into it, melded into its narrative, both visually and, you know, with dialogue and characters and all that stuff. And Godzilla times Kong is what the American movies of the last like 7 years, why they're a little bit problematic to me, because they bounce between it's very, they all feel like the original Godzilla American version with Ray, what's his face?
Perry Mason.
But yeah, Perry Mason shows up. You know, and he's like, it's like this
Raymond Burr
stuff. Raymond Burr, thank you.
This was driving me nuts for a second.
Yeah. I've been doing that. I can't remember anybody anymore. I'm totally senile. The whole thing with the old Godzilla American version is it really felt that way. It was like these characters talking about this stuff, and then you cut and you'd watch at that time dudes in suits wrecking tiny towns and cities. And the new American movies are more aping that than they are like Gojira, the actual original Godzilla, which Godzilla Minus One does very effectively. And it's just, it's a very interesting and cool contrast right now, to think about those two things and why Godzilla Minus One is actually a great film and Godzilla times Kong is fine. It's a fine Sunday matinee, you know, I don't have problems, but it's that it's more pornography for kaiju lovers.
Right.
You know, versus an actual story. So anyway, I saw that and those other things, and now we should talk about Roadhouse.
Oh, sure. I think we actually did a whole podcast episode some time ago that was just about the original 1989 Patrick Swayze Roadhouse.
We did do that. And now,
we recently spent an evening, a delightful evening among friends, doing a triple feature of the original 1989 Roadhouse. The surprise, there was a sequel in the early 2000s, Roadhouse 2 Last Call.
Starring Jonathan Shake.
Right.
As Patrick Swayze's son.
Son, yeah. Direct sequel.
I saw Jonathan Shake more than once on the Strike Lines. So I've always loved Jonathan Shake.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, but the people I was walking with, I was like, holy shit, that's Jonathan Shake. And they were like, what?
Yeah, the star of Roadhouse 2, Last Call.
Yeah, fuck off, you guys. Get together.
And then we topped it off with recent Jake Gyllenhaal, Doug Liman remake. Reboot, reimagining of Roadhouse.
I posted about it on Facebook, and my mother-in-law, I was just saying, I have no problem with any Roadhouse. Just keep giving me Roadhouse movies and I'll be happy. And that's honestly, even the Jonathan Shake Roadhouse 2, I'd rather watch that than so many other movies. But my mother-in-law commented on the thread where I posted about Lovin' Roadhouse, and she's like, oh yeah, I can't wait to see the new one. I hope it's as good as the first one. I'm a big fan of Jake G. And I thought she'd been hacked. I assumed she had been hacked. I immediately told my wife, who called my mother-in-law, and said,
we have to get some help immediately.
Did you say that? And she came back and said, yes, that's me. I said that. And I was like, one, you're referring to Jake Gyllenhaal as Jake G. And that's too much for me.
Well, no, all his close friends call him Jake G.
Oh, so she's close with him?
Yeah, I think so. She must be. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That freaked me out, but also that she said, I hope it's as good as the original.
Yeah.
So last time she was over, I was like, so you love the original Roadhouse? And she's like, I don't know. I saw it.
Yeah, like, she just is hoping it's, you know, the new one is at least as good as that movie she saw.
I asked her, do you remember? I mean, the first thing I asked her was like, so you like that part where Patrick Swayze tears out
Marshall Teague's throat?
And she was like, what? I don't remember that. And I was like, do you remember anything about Roadhouse, the original with Patrick Swayze? She said, I don't know. But she saw the new one and she liked it. So here we are.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's interesting because they've been trying to remake Roadhouse for years because one time, like, Ronda Rousey was attached.
I would love for them to go back in time and make that happen.
Yeah, I would. You know, I was like, I'd watch that. But yeah, so they finally got around to getting it done. And that's the thing is, like, first off, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Doug Liman Roadhouse is perfectly entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a great movie, but it's a fun B movie. Interesting fight scenes and in general, just kind of a good, fun B movie time, which is what Roadhouse is supposed to be. What I don't understand is why anyone felt the need to call this movie Roadhouse and attach it to the 1989 Patrick Swayze movie, which, like, let's be honest, it wasn't like a blockbuster hit. It was a mid low budget late 80s cult movie. Yeah. And so for some reason, like, Amazon Prime, you know, streaming ran the numbers on whether, you know, this movie would, you know, get more streams if it was attached to a known cult Patrick Swayze property or not. And I guess they came up with, like, yeah, we'll get 4 more streams. So, because the movie itself is, like, you know, they recycle a few, you know, recognizable lines. And it's more or less the similar kind of setup. But it's a non-unique setup. I mean, the thing that makes Roadhouse work, the original, as a B movie, is that it's essentially a stranger comes to town Western, and yep. it follows that exact formula, and it's a very well recognized formula, and you can do lots of variations with it that are fun and need to be character driven in order to work. So, you know, the plot wasn't, like, so strangely unique. Like, if you're going to remake Die Hard, like, you're kind of stuck doing Die Hard because it's like the concept is so unique. In the action, you know, the basic story that.
Wait a second. Hear me out for a second. What if you took Die Hard
and put it in an airport
on a battleship, and there's a cook,
and there's some kind of siege.
There's a siege.
Yeah.
And there's a cook who works on the battleship who foils the siege. But again,
that's like, you know, taking Under Siege, tried to take the Die Hard formula and they ended up having to make a completely different movie, because if you're going to remake Die Hard, it's just Die Hard. Like, conceptually, to make it work, it has to have this character in this specific situation.
Okay. What about things. Just hang on. I'm going to pitch you this. So the same kind of group, a bunch of robbers pretending to be terrorists. But instead of taking over a tower in Century City, which is supposed to be somewhere. Yeah, it's supposed to be LA, right?
Yeah.
So in Century City, instead taking over that tower, what they do is they hold the entirety of Beverly Hills under siege. What, like, and imagine Robert Davi is the bad guy. He's the main bad guy. His name is Bat Masterson. I'm spitballing. And he takes over, and Ken Wall, who we haven't given a shot to in too long.
In a while, yeah.
Ken Wall is the McClane type character. What do you think of that?
I mean, that could work.
Yeah, it could. It really could.
But it's like, if you can just jettison trying to understand why the Roadhouse IP is being used, mm-hmm. it's a perfectly entertaining, serviceable little action punch 'em up. We got Gyllenhaal does a good job as the tortured ex-MMA fighter, and then you got the actual MMA guy, Conor McGregor, who that's a questionable inclusion into the movie because that guy's got some pretty serious allegations against him.
I didn't know
multiple allegations of sexual assault and some other violent activities. So it's kind of,
and this movie doesn't make him not seem like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's playing he's the heavy, he's the bad guy, he's the nemesis, he's the Marshall Teague to Jake Gyllenhaal's Patrick Swayze. That's an issue with the casting in the movie, because it's stunt casting, and it's if you're gonna stunt cast, you know, maybe stunt cast someone who hasn't been accused of some bad shit.
Do you know what the lineage of it is? I mean, did they hire him after he was accused, or did they hire him before?
I mean, I don't know.
Or maybe they just hired him because they were looking for a famous MMA guy and they didn't.
Yeah, no. That's like, I think it was effectively the gimmick for this remake is, you know, Patrick Swayze's not, he's just a cooler who has a philosophy degree. I'm trying to remember what his background, if we went into the deep background of why he can fight so well. But in the new one, it's Jake Gyllenhaal is an ex MMA guy. So
yeah.
So like, oh, okay, we got to get a real MMA fighter in here to be the bad guy that he can fight. Sense.
Well,
it makes a certain amount of sense if you're doing, you know, if you're trying to appeal to that demographic. But yeah. So
I mean, I just, like, I'm sure they could have found someone who wasn't guilty, but is he the biggest MMA guy going right now?
Well, yeah, McGregor's a big, huge name in MMA. That's why, right? Okay. Again, it's a stunt casting. You don't stunt cast with like an unknown MMA fighter.
Yeah, but he's number one.
I know he's a huge, huge name. I'm not even sure if he's still actively fighting anymore. If you're counting famous MMA fighters on your hand, McGregor's one of them.
I think Jake Gyllenhaal is now actually fighting professionally, but I don't know about, because Jake Gyllenhaal is very dedicated to his performances. So
yeah, No, I think he stopped acting.
Yeah, because of this movie.
Yeah, he's Roadhouse convinced him to devote his life to being an MMA fighter.
So we've bounced over the sequel.
With good reason, because it's free. I honestly, we watched this like less than a week ago, and I can barely remember anything about it.
Yeah, it's really bad.
It's a really bland, like you know, the Gyllenhaal remake reboot, while unnecessary, is at least entertaining. And it's got some good fights and et cetera, et cetera. The Roadhouse 2 : Last Call is the only word I can use to describe it is inessential.
Yeah.
Like it, cause it's very convoluted. If I remember the plot, it's very convoluted. It's like way more convoluted than it needs to be, you know. And if you're going to do a Roadhouse 2, you got to just do another, you know, Man Comes to Town Western. But what they did instead is the movie spends a lot of time really over explaining its sequelness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our main character is Patrick Swayze's son. And he's a DEA agent who's involved in DEA busts in the beginning of the movie, which doesn't go anywhere. It's just to establish you could just say he's a DEA agent. You don't have to spend 10 minutes going through a whole fucking thing, of runtime. But then that's not where the movie's going. Like the movie starts with like DEA stuff and you're like, oh, okay, here we're going to, and then no, after that's just to establish what he does for a living. And then he gets a call or something from Will Patton. The always reliable Will Patton, who's his uncle, but I can't remember if he's like actually supposed to be Patrick Swayze's like biological brother or if he was just friend of the family uncle or not. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But he's having trouble at his roadhouse bar in what, the Everglades? Is it like in Florida?
Yeah.
Or was that? No,
new ones.
No, the Gyllenhaal one's in Florida. The Roadhouse 2 is like in the bayou or something.
Yeah. But it like moves out because the first one was the Midwest, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was somewhere. Yeah, it was the mythic Midwest of America. He goes to help Will Patton for whatever reason. I don't even remember. And then, but Will Patton has run afoul of like, I guess the local drug trade and the heavy, enforcer around them parts is fucking Jake Busey, which doesn't make any sense. And then you think he's the bad guy, but then there's like another like bad guy on higher than him that he reports to who shows up later. Like it becomes the plot becomes so convoluted and it's so dull,
mm-hmm.
that it's like the opposite of what made the first Roadhouse so accessible. Again, is that simple Western, good guy versus bad guy. Stranger comes to town story.
The film style is very early aughts.
It's like a 2006. Was it 2006? Somewhere around there.
But when people shot their straight to DVD streaming movies back then, it was very practical and very flat.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't, the low budget filmmakers weren't taking any risks at all. So it's just like watching an episode of a cheap TV show from the 80s.
Yeah. It was like it really played like a kind of a very bland TV movie.
Like, yes.
I'm wondering if did it feel like maybe it was a TV movie?
Mm. I didn't even think
about that.
Yeah. I don't know how it's quantified in the industry because it's different what a TV movie and a straight to video movie is.
Yeah.
But I would say,
maybe it was just straight. Maybe it's just straight to video. That's what it felt like. It really felt.
I think it was straight to, because there was still Blockbuster, maybe.
Yeah. Somewhere in that or straight to. Yes. Cause that's the thing. But but you're right. You made a good point. Like the hallmark of like the early 2000s, mid low budge movies were what differentiates them a lot from their like the 80s, 90s mid low budge movies. The 80s, 90s mid low budge movies would occasionally like try something really weird and crazy.
Yeah.
And that's what made it fun to kind of just grab, like, sure, I'll watch Slipstream starring Mark Hamill. I'll rent that. I don't know. What the hell is this? He's got a beard.
The only way to get that movie on physical media is in a collection of five films that's just called Slipstream. But on the front of the box, it says Slipstream, Mark Hamill, And at the bottom it says 4 bonus movies. And you get it because you want to see Slipstream.
With Mark Hamill, of course.
With Mark Hamill. And it's a pan and scanner. It's the full aspect ratio. But the 4 movies that come with it are all TV movies starring Chuck Norris.
That's so random.
I don't know why. The Chuck Norris movies together in the foursome, other than Slipstream, they make sense together. That's a box set.
Yeah, that's a Chuck Norris foursome.
Yeah, you buy these crappy Chuck Norris presidential friend and, you know, patriotic. Oh,
I think Presidential Friend is my favorite Chuck Norris movie.
Patriotic Poppy.
Why does that make me? Yeah, why did it make me feel like it was the cover was Chuck Norris and then like a dog in a suit, like as the president?
I would watch that, but
and Chuck Norris is like the Secret Service agent that is tasked with protecting the president dog.
Yeah, he had a bunch of other than what's it called? Walker, Texas Ranger. So he had that, and then he had
Texas Ranger.
Right. So while he was doing that, and then he did, after that got canceled, then he did Walker, Texas Ranger movies.
Yeah, TV movies.
And while
he
was doing those, he also created these other TV Chuck Norris franchises, one of which where he's a presidential aide of some kind who has to help the president.
But back to Slipstream. Yeah. You know, there would be like they would be weird movies. Like Slipstream is like this weird sci-fi movie about like it's like the post-apocalyptic future, but the only way people can travel is like by gliders
on solar winds. There's on solar wind.
Yeah, it's like so such a you're like what? Okay, I gotta watch this. This is a crazy idea. And it's not very good, but at least you're just like confused enough that it keeps you interested. But like the early 2000s versions of those movies are very bland, a lot of procedural kind of based stuff that is just like, oh, there's nothing, there's no weird chances are being taken on story or film style or anything because it's like fully corporate controlled by that point.
Mm-hmm.
So no Slipstreams are getting through.
Roadhouse 2 Last Call has, it deeply feels like a corporate thing. It's a
spreadsheet. It feels like watching a spreadsheet.
It's an algorithmic conclusion. Now, when they reach those conclusions, they just make cartoons.
Algorithmic Conclusion is my favorite Brian Eno album.
I really like Jonathan Shake and I love his career. You know, he was in That Thing You Do, the Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what put him on the map. But then he just turned it into this genre, like B and low budget movie career, and he's worked constantly for decades. And nobody knows his name except for me, I guess. But I just deeply respect him. So that's what got me through.
Yeah. The road. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and I don't even like, you know, I mean, I shit talk Jake Busey, but I don't dislike Jake Busey. I just think he was woefully miscast as the heavy in this case.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure that Jake Busey's not as insane as his dad, because I went to an audition and I was, you know, he was my competition and we were in the waiting room and I was just, you know, in what I thought the character would wear, which was like a conservative sort of, you know, working man conservative type of deal, khakis, that sort of thing. Button-down shirt. And he was there in like flowy, his pants were like flowy, I don't know what they call those.
Were they like MC Hammer pants?
Yeah, MC Hammer pants. He had MC Hammer pants. And then his top was this sheer neon like tank, you know, so you could see his body.
Well, he's definitely going to be remembered at the audition.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I saw him there, I was like, did I fuck up?
I'm just imagining you're very next audition wearing an identical, like you retrieved an identical Jake Busey outfit. And, you know, but it's, you know, it's like for, you know, How to Get Away with Murder. And you're like, I'm sorry. Are you?
I'm sorry. Why are you wearing that?
You're here for what?
That's exactly what I did. And it turns out people don't want to see my nipples, but
yeah. Yes. So in fact, I'm escorted off the lot when I show them.
I don't know. It wasn't a lot.
Jake Busey can get away with it, but more.
It was a casting office in a back alley in Venice. That's
that doesn't sound like a casting office.
I don't know what it was, but Jake Busey was there. So, all right. It's an interesting thing, the Roadhouse deal. Because, you know, we have our straight to video sequel from the early aughts, and then we have this brand new reboot, remake.
Yeah, reimagining, sequel, whatever.
Whatever. And I think both the sequel and the remake make the same mistake.
And what's that?
Well, I think you already pointed it out earlier. It's that they have to create this giant backstory where they're experts at killing people. But you said in the original Roadhouse, he's just a fucking guy.
Well, yeah, and that's, yeah, that's, I think it's part of, like, you know, movies feel they do have to over-explain things these days, because they do the new Roadhouse, because, like, the Gyllenhaal Roadhouse, plot-wise, is actually very close in its simplicity to the original Roadhouse, but they do spend an inordinate amount of time reminding the audience that Jake Gyllenhaal is haunted by his MMA past. There's at least 2 to 3 flashbacks of his MMA haunted past, which are utterly unnecessary. And
every
time he
goes to sleep on the boat,
he dreams of his tortured past. And, you know, the flip side is, like, the original 89 Swayze Roadhouse is established that I think it's just established in dialogue when he's talking to picnic table, tablecloth dress.
Right. Yes.
The
lady that whose husband Bill Murray calls every time he sees Roadhouse.
But I think they, in some of their dialogue, you know, he alludes to, like, oh yeah, I, you know, got really violent once and it haunts me, kind of thing. Which is why I try not to be violent.
He killed a competitor.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that was that. But there's no flashback. There's no, like, ooh, let's see it so we can see how tortured he is. No. He just explains it and then the plot moves on. But that sets it up for, you know, the final confrontation with Marshall Teague's character. we're like, uh oh, he's been pushed too far. Time he talked about this is gonna go off the rails.
I mean, do you want to watch a movie where your protagonist isn't pushed too far? I mean, that's what I want to watch.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, what I do find tedious, like, I did find all of the Gyllenhaal MMA flashbacks tedious and unnecessary to explain what's going on in the movie. It's a modern film. It's a modern American film, trend where, and I think a lot of it has to do with, like, now we're just assuming people are on their phones all the time and only half paying attention to the movie. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep reminding basic information. We have to pepper it through the whole thing. We can't set up some information in Act One and then come back to it in Act Three without referencing it at least 4 or 5 times in Act Two now.
That's true. That sucks.
So yeah, that's the main difference. Where it's like by the second flashback, I was like, yeah, I get it. He's tortured. Fine. Why am I watching him in the octagon again?
Yeah. I mean, the original movie's what, an hour 42 minutes?
Something like that. Long? Yeah. Yeah. It's nice and tight.
And the sequel is 90 minutes, and the reboot is almost
about way longer.
Yeah, it felt way longer because they didn't know what they were doing. But also, the new one is almost 2 hours.
Yeah, that's too long.
Too long. Yeah. And if they cut anything out of the original, it was the shit you're talking about in this remake. Where they have to make this whole thing about his MMA thing. What's great about Roadhouse is what's cool about Man with No Name Westerns is he's got no name. You don't know. And it's not that he just doesn't have a name. It's that you don't know where he's from.
Yeah. There's a mystery. And it's like, you know, he shows up into town and goes, you know, I got pushed too far once, so don't push me. And then that's all you need.
Yeah,
then it's like, oh, okay, everybody better be cool or there's going to be trouble. And it's like, we know, and actually there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, of course somebody's going to be a douchebag.
Somebody's going to push him too far.
But you don't, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying about both the other Roadhouse movies other than the Roadhouse is they give you so much information you don't need. And they spend scenes telling you about, you know, the sequel was Secret Service or whatever, and then the remake is MMA, whatever it is. You're telling me all this shit I do not need to know, because the actions of your lead character are what defines him.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like in Roadhouse 2, it's like, you know, there's a, you know, ultimately, you know, he's establishes a like a for some reason as a DEA agent so they can bring in the DEA at the end to catch all the guys, but ultimately that wasn't you didn't really need to do that complicatedness. He just has to like take out the bad guys. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, that's it. It's this, I mean, and it's a thing. I mean, I think, you know, the screenwriting gurus of the 90s and early aughts kind of push people in this direction where it's like, you have to over explain the history of your character. No, you don't. I mean, the reason Roadhouse sticks and is a cult thing is because Patrick Swayze, that's it. Patrick Swayze, not a very good actor, but a dedicated one.
Yeah, but like, yeah, he's limited in range as an actor, but had a really magnetic and charming screen presence. So he was a really good movie star.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And as a character, I mean, and I'm a fan.
No, and then you smartly, you know, pair him up with you know, a Sam Elliott, you know, a really, you know, recognizable and fun and also magnetic character actor, to balance the movie star out, and ground the movie star in some reality. And then you pit them against, you know, a Ben Gazzara, as the villain, who's just going to just chew scenery in the best way possible. Yeah. Like, you know, if there is someone who understood the assignment better than Ben Gazzara in Roadhouse, I don't know who they are.
No, there's no better. There's,
like, he was, it was clear he understood exactly what the movie was, what his role was in it. And if he wasn't having the time of his life making that movie, he's an even better actor than I think he is. And I think he's a brilliant actor.
Yeah. He's great. I miss that kind of stuff. And I miss filmmakers, especially B-movie filmmakers, allowing their audience to just accept their lead character. You know, I mean, that's what's great about Roadhouse. You don't know why. And it's kind of crazy that he does all the stuff he does. And you don't know why.
Yeah, and it's just like, the weird, like, giggly, you know, Kevin Tai just shows up the beginning to hire this guy with the most insane perm slash mullet you've ever seen, like hires him away from this bar. The plot moves like immediately in the original Roadhouse. It just starts with a big bar fight, and then you know the Roadhouse owner is like, "I'd like to hire you," and he's like, "All right." It's like that's it.
That's it.
And we're off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's allowing your audience to make those leaps without a tremendous amount of backstory, which adds to the running time. And I don't know, maybe audiences today can't accept that kind of thing. But in the 80s, as a teenager, I was like, yeah, I don't need
to. You got it immediately. You knew, like, Dalton was like, he's the good guy. He's going to get shit done. And, you know, and he's super cool because look at that hair. And he does Tai Chi and he lives in a barn loft that is remarkably like well decorated by this old grizzled barnyard guy, like who's got like apparently like a hidden talent for interior design.
Yeah, it's a great barn. I would stay in that barn if it Airbnb'd. I'd go there.
Yeah, you just have to put up with Brad Wesley's helicopter Playboy Mansion pool parties.
Well, I'm assuming that's across the river. I'm assuming that's already been cleaned out.
Well, yeah, if that's post, yeah, if it's post Roadhouse, yeah.
Then, yeah, like now, I mean, I imagine you can Airbnb that very barn on that very river.
Yeah.
You know, and I would do it if it was real. I would do
it. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it sounds
I'd never
great.
Leave.
I will squat. In that bitch, and nobody.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm gonna die in this barn loft.
Yeah, I honestly, I mean, like when he walks out, when Patrick Swayze walks out of the open air window, it's open air.
Yeah,
his loft. There's no screens.
Nope.
He lives on a river. I know
he
it's
lives like
water.
right on a river. It's gonna be just mosquitoes everywhere.
There's got to be so many mosquitoes. I mean, I know the river. They don't nest in the river, but there's little puddles of shit on the side on the bank. That they're it's a mess. And there's no mention of that. And so, part of that fantasy is why I want to live in that world, but also. Yeah. I don't have to hassle.
Well, but Swayze's backstory. Dalton is so zen and at one with nature.
He does Tai Chi.
The mosquitoes just leave him alone.
Yeah, yeah. Also, he's covered in like crazy amounts of oil, so maybe the scent.
Yeah, no, he's like, he's like a layer of glistening Vaseline at all times.
Vaseline covered in a thin layer of deep woods off.
Yeah.
And then mosquitoes don't bother you. All right. I mean,
it's simple.
Yeah. We all have our heroes. Maybe they're the wrong ones. I don't know. It's an election year. Anyway, let's wrap this thing up. Steve Skelton, that was very fun. That's our take on the entire Roadhouse trilogy.
Yeah. The Roadhouse cinematic universe.
The
original, still the best, still the classic. The sequel, I don't remember it, so good luck. And the Gyllenhaal and Doug Liman remake is surprisingly enjoyable. I found it entirely unnecessary to call it Roadhouse, for what it is, it was very entertaining. And had a lot of punching and fighting.
Yeah, that's what Doug Liman does.
Yeah,
he's very.
The thing I will say for the latest one, what I thought was really interesting about it on for the director's side, because speaking of Doug Liman, who for my money did the best Jason Bourne movie, the first one where you could see the fights. Like he's doing something interesting in this Roadhouse where I'm not sure exactly what the technique is, but it feels like they're doing like in the fight scenes, because they're very fast and they're very kinetic. It feels like they're doing drop frames, but then doing like CG blending between the drop frames, because it doesn't, it's not jarring. It's not like that, that stuttery motion. Yeah. It's like a fast motion blend. So you can still kind of see the fights, but it's doing the effect that I think Paul Greengrass wanted to achieve in the Bourne movies, but really just achieved shaking the camera so much you couldn't follow the action.
I was wondering about that, and I was wondering if some of the punches, like, that landed, because they felt good, and you know, they look cool, but something about them looked unreal, and I was wondering, I mean, like, what you're saying is frame removal or whatever, but I was wondering if it was just CG. There's, like...
It feels, I'd like to find out more about it. Maybe there'll be, maybe there's an interview, or maybe there'll be some sort of interview with Lyman at some point where he can talk about, you know, how they did that. But that's my guess is that it's doing kind of standard drop frame to do the higher speed, more kinetic feel, but then doing kind of a weird CG blend between the drop frames. So you don't, so it's not, it, you don't get that stutteriness of drop frame.
Right.
It, like, right, it has this weird kind of like almost slightly animated blend.
Yeah, it's like they were.
It's
doing
interesting.
It's cool. I liked it. It's like
because I could still follow the fights really well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just old school stage combat, like on Simon and Simon or whatever. But when you're capturing, you know, it for a movie, you can't do the cheap TV stuff.
Yeah.
So they added the CGI into it to, so you could see, because what you're seeing is the fist actually hitting the face. Whereas if you watch,
yeah, might be a little, you know, there might be a little CG assist on like the contact,
like
as
old,
well. Yeah.
Old TV shows, you see, and they do the they do the cross, and they're doing,
well, they do it at the angle. So yeah, you don't see, you don't see
right.
the connect, but
right.
they, you do, yeah.
So they did this one in angles where you can see the connect and filled in the connect, I think. Which I'm 100% into. I think that's a great...
No, it was very... It worked. It was fun and exciting and visually really interesting. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But
all right. So we liked Roadhouse the New and Roadhouse the Old, but not Roadhouse the Middle.
No, I don't... I can't... I've actually forgotten more of it while we've been talking, so it's kind of just drifting away.
I would just like to issue a public apology to Jonathan Shake.
It's nothing against great. Jonathan Shake. I like Jonathan Shake. It's just, you know,
Jonathan
the movie,
Shake's great.
Yeah, you can't control, you know, whether the movie you're in is going to turn out well or not.
Yeah. You
At least Will Patton got to lay down for a good portion of the shoot.
Like Eric Stoltz in any contest.
Exactly.
All right, everybody. That's been March edition of the Film Pigs in April. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.